The following is from Democracy Now! On Monday, August 14.
From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now! Militarized white nationalists descended on Charlottesville, Virginia this weekend for a Unite the rally that erupted into violence. There were three deaths. They were met by opponents, including clergy students, Black Lives Matter activists, and protesters with the anti-fascist movement known as Antifa. President Trump responded by blaming the violence on many sides.
We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides. On many sides. It's been going on for a long time in our country. Not Donald Trump, not Barack Obama. It's been going on for a long, long time.
We'll host a roundtable discussion with a protester who survived the car attack. A domestic terrorism attack when protesting against white nationalists in Charlottesville. We'll speak with a nurse who treated the wounded, as well as Jalaine Schmidt, an organizer with the local Black Lives Movement and professor at University of Virginia. Dr. Cornel West was there, and Reverend Tracy Blackman, Executive Minister of Justice and Witness Ministries of the United Church of Christ. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Thousands of people rallied in cities across the United States Sunday to protest deadly violence by a mob of Ku Klux Klan members and neo-Nazis during a rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, on Saturday. A 20-year-old Nazi sympathizer killed one anti-racist activist and injured more than a dozen others when he intentionally drove his car through a crowd of people protesting against the KKK and neo-Nazis, who were rallying to oppose Charlottesville's plan to remove a monument of the Confederate General Robert E. Lee from a downtown public park. On Sunday, thousands poured into the streets of Seattle, Denver, Baltimore, San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Diego, Dallas, Washington, D.C., Miami, Charlottesville, Virginia, to protest the white supremacist violence and mourn the death of 32-year-old Heather Heyer, who was killed in the attack. This is David Modimer at a rally in New York.
It's very interesting that he made a big point in his campaign about naming radical Islamic terrorism. And also, he made this huge show of denouncing MS-13, but he can't come out and denounce white supremacy. I mean, that's outrageous.
At least three people were arrested at the protest in New York City. Across the country, many of the protesters also condemned the Trump administration for its ties to far-right and white supremacist figures. And President Trump's refusal to explicitly denounce the neo-Nazis and KKK members for carrying out the deadly violence. This is Nino Brown speaking at a rally organized by Boston Feminists for Liberation.
Black Panther Party eliminated. Martin Luther King eliminated. Fred Hansen eliminated. The Ku Klux Klan in the presidency, in the White House, right? So lines are being drawn, and it's all going to come down to which side are you on? That's an old Union song, right? Which side are you on?
In Seattle, Washington, at least three people were arrested as hundreds rallied Sunday to denounce the violence in Charlottesville and to oppose a local demonstration by the pro-Trump far-right group, the Patriot Prayer. The white supremacist violence in Charlottesville began Friday night as thousands of neo-Nazis, KKK members, and other white nationalists began descending on the city of Charlottesville to participate in the Unite the Right rally. Hundreds of white men and women bearing torches marched on the University of Virginia campus and surrounded the statue of Thomas Jefferson on Friday night, chanting, "You will not replace us," and "White Lives Matter." Thousands of counter-protesters also descended on Charlottesville over the weekend, including clergy, students, Black Lives Matter activists and protesters with the anti-fascist movement known as Antifa. On Saturday morning, more than 1,000 white supremacists marched to the public park, recently renamed Emancipation Park, which is home to the statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee. Many were carrying Nazi flags and other white supremacist paraphernalia, wore body armor, and carried assault rifles and pistols. They were met by the thousands of anti-racist counter-demonstrators. Witnesses report police did little to intervene, even as fights broke out. Around 1:45 p.m., a man named James Alex Fields, who had been rallying with the white supremacists earlier in the day, drove his Dodge Charger into a crowd of counter-demonstrators, then peeled away in reverse in what many are calling an act of terrorism. A local paralegal named Heather Heyer was killed in the attack, and at least 19 others were injured. Heyer had repeatedly championed civil rights issues on social media. Her Facebook cover read, "If you're not outraged, you're not paying attention." This is Heather Heyer's mother, Susan Breaux, speaking on ABC News.
And that's what she was doing that day. Yesterday, when she was killed, she was doing that with people. She was saying, "Well, tell me why you're here." And I knew this because this is what her friends told me. And that's what Heather's life was all about: passion for fairness, passion for equality, passion for justice.
Heather Heyer's mother speaking on NBC this weekend. One of James Alex Fields' high school teachers says he was obsessed with Adolf Hitler and Nazi military history and showed clear Nazi sympathies that the teacher tried unsuccessfully to steer him away from. Fields has been charged with one count of second-degree murder and is slated to be arraigned today. Two state troopers, Pilot Lieutenant H.J. Cullen and Trooper Pilot Burke M.M. Bates, also died Saturday when their helicopter crashed en route to the scene of the violence. Photographs and videos also show white supremacists beating other counter-demonstrators, including a young African-American protester named DeAndre Harris. He said, quote, "They were trying to kill me out there. The police didn't budge, and I was getting beat to a pulp," he said. This is Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe condemning the violence.
"And I have a message to all the white supremacists and the Nazis who came into Charlottesville today. Our message is plain and simple. Go home. You are not wanted in this great commonwealth. Shame on you. You pretend that you're patriots, but you are anything but a patriot."
President Trump, however, refused to single out white supremacist violence.
"We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides, on many sides. It's been going on for a long time in our country. Not Donald Trump, not Barack Obama. This has been going on for a long, long time. It has no place in America. What is vital now is a swift restoration of law and order and the protection of innocent lives."
Trump's comments sparked widespread outrage. A new White House statement on Sunday explicitly denounced the Ku Klux Klan and neo-Nazi groups, but it was attributed to an unnamed spokesperson and not the president himself. Other members of the Trump administration have more explicitly condemned the violence. Trump's national security adviser, H.R. McMaster, said the attack constituted terrorism. Meanwhile, in Lexington, Kentucky, Mayor Jim Gray says Lexington will remove two Confederate monuments from the former courthouse after the white supremacist violence in Virginia. He will go to Charlottesville, Virginia, and spend the hour speaking with people who were there on Saturday, including a witness to the deadly attack, a nurse who treated the injured counter-protesters, faith leaders, and more. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Today, we spend the hour on the terror in Charlottesville, a so-called Unite the Right white nationalist rally that took place in Charlottesville this weekend that erupted into violence, resulting in three deaths. Thousands of white nationalists descended on Charlottesville to participate in the rally. on Friday night and Saturday and oppose a plan to remove a statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee from a city park. They were soon outnumbered by opponents, including clergy, students, Black Lives Matter activists, and protesters with the anti-fascist movement known as Antifa. Events began late on Friday when hundreds of torch-bearing white supremacists held a surprise march on the main quadrangle of the campus of the University of Virginia, chanting, "Blood and soil, you will not replace us, and Jew will not replace us." They walked to a statue of Thomas Jefferson, surrounded a small group of counter-protesters gathered there, including a small group of students with a banner reading, "Virginia Students Act Against White Supremacy." ProPublica reports that despite intense interest from the media, police, and local anti-racists, the white supremacists kept the location of their intimidating Friday night march secret until the last minute. In a Facebook post, Charlottesville Mayor Mike Signer called it a, quote, "cowardly parade of hatred, bigotry, racism, and intolerance," and said he was beyond disgusted by this unsanctioned and despicable display of visual intimidation on a college campus, Signer said. The next day, Saturday, the far-right forces, numbering between 1,000 and 1,500, marched to Emancipation Park for a rally set to take place at noon. Many wore body armor and carried assault rifles and pistols, taking advantage of Virginia's loose firearm laws. They were met by anti-racist counter-demonstrators, and fights broke out before the rally began. Witnesses report police did little to intervene. Then, around 1:45 p.m. Virginia time, a man later identified as James Alex Fields drove his Dodge Charger into a crowd of demonstrators, then peeled away in reverse at high speed in what many are calling an act of terror. An iconic image of the car attack featured in media around the world shows protesters flying through the air after they were hit. A local paralegal named Heather Heyer was killed in the car attack. At least 19 others were injured. Heather worked at Miller Law Group, a law firm that helps people going through bankruptcy. She'd repeatedly championed civil rights issues on her social media. Her Facebook cover read, "If you're not outraged, you're not paying attention." A statement from Heyer's mother on the GoFundMe page read, quote, "She died doing what was right. My heart is broken, but I am forever proud of her." This is her mother, Susan Brose, speaking on NBC.
And that's what she was doing that day. Yesterday, when she was killed, she was doing that with people. She was saying, "Well, tell me why you're here." And I know this because this is what her friends told me. And that's what Heather's life was all about, passion for fairness, passion for equality, passion for justice.
Two Virginia State Troopers, Lieutenant H.J. Cullen and Trooper Pilot Burke M.M. Bates, also died on Saturday when their helicopter crashed en route to the scene of the violence. In another incident Saturday, white supremacists were captured in a photo beating 20-year-old African-American protester DeAndre Harris, who is a hip-hop artist and assistant special education teacher at an area high school. Harris later described the attack to the Los Angeles Times.
"Standing here, and then we was walking down as they were walking down, and then I think we got, like, right here. And they just rushed us."
Where's here?
Yeah, like right here in this open way right here.
So right in front of the police station is right here.
I keep hearing all this chaos going around on me, and I feel myself getting hit. So I'm trying to get up and run. But I can't. Every time I got up, I just lose consciousness and fall back out. Till the last time I got to open my eyes and I see all my friends there, and they pick me up and take me over there so I can get help. I was gassed in the head. Broke my wrist, chipped my tooth, bust my lip, got a bunch of cuts and abrasions all on my knees and elbows. I got 8 staples in my head."
One of the people shown in the photo of white supremacists assaulting Harris is Michael Tubbs, a well-known KKK member. On Saturday, President Trump addressed reporters at his golf resort in Bedminster, New Jersey, blaming the violence in Charlottesville on many sides.
We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides. On many sides. It's been going on for a long time in our country. Not Donald Trump, not Barack Obama. This has been going on for a long, long time. It is no place in America. What is vital now is a swift restoration of law and order and the protection of innocent lives.
A new White House statement Sunday explicitly denounced the Ku Klux Klan and neo-Nazi groups, but it was attributed to an unnamed spokesperson and not the president himself. The Justice Department says it's launched an investigation. Meanwhile, James Alex Fields, the man who drove his car into the crowd and has now been charged with second-degree murder and other counts and has a bond hearing this morning, local media reports, quote, a high school teacher who knew Fields and said Fields was fascinated with Nazism, idolized Adolf Hitler, and had been singled out by Ohio school officials in the ninth grade for his, quote, deeply held radical convictions on race. For more, we're going to Charlottesville, Virginia, where we're joined by Brandi Gonzalez, who survived the car rampage when she was protesting against the white nationalists. Also in Charlottesville is Lisa Moore. She's a registered nurse who assisted a victim of the car attack. Then we will do a roundtable with religious leaders and a member of Black Lives Matter, a professor at University of Virginia, who is part of the organizing of the anti-fascist protesters. Let's begin with Brandi. Let's begin our show right now with Brandi Gonzalez. Brandi Gonzalez is a survivor, as of this weekend, a survivor of the car rampage. Brandi, talk about what happened on Saturday, why you were there protesting, and what happened when this car pulled up.
First, I just want to say thank you for having me on the show. And I also wanted to say that my heart goes out to Heather Heyer and her friends and family and everyone. You know, this didn't need to happen. And I just, you know, there's a lot of love out there for everyone. I just wanted to say that first. I was out there on Saturday because I firmly believe that when white supremacy, when fascism, when anti-blackness, when all of that decides to show its ugly face, we all have a responsibility to stand up and oppose it, to fight it, and to make sure that they know that it's not okay, it will never be okay, that they always lose, they historically lose, and that they will lose again. That's why I decided to be there. On Saturday, me and my group arrived at around 8 a.m., to Emancipation Park. There was like the beginnings of things, lots of Nazis and Klan and other various groups all gathering behind their barricades. It wasn't for until like maybe an hour after that that things started to get tense over there. A heavier presence of I believe they call themselves the Alt Knights, I don't know, but they were just white supremacists carrying like automatic weapons and completely holding the line around the area. And I definitely I saw their presence far more than police, for the first couple of hours. And it wasn't until at least that I noticed that when, another group, decided to like march down to join them, that some scuffles broke out. There was tear gas being thrown from inside Emancipation Park, from inside their confines. I dodged many tree limbs, just lots of violence coming from their side, lots of slurs. It wasn't until later, around 11 a.m., when a large group of members of DSA, Democratic Socialists of America, attempted to come into the area at Emancipation Park, and we're met with tear gas from, I'm not sure if the tear gas was coming from police. I believe it was coming from police, but it's possible that it was more from, from the white nationalists in the little pen. But they came around down the corner from McGuffey Park and held that corner for a long time. It was really amazing. I know at that point, a friend of mine and I were treating some people that had suffered from tear gas and like pepper spray and things like that.
And talk about what happened just after 1 p.m.
We had gotten word that some Nazis were planning on heading down to Friendship Circle, which is a neighborhood of color, to incite violence and hurt people. And so a group from DSA had headed down there to assist them, and luckily had found out that the neighborhood had actually taken care of it themselves and driven them out. And at that point, the rest of us that were at McGuffey Park started marching down towards Water Street, where we were just, you know, chanting so many beautiful things, like, you know, people together. It was a really beautiful thing. We got to the top of Water Street and we could see the crowd of DSA coming down the opposite hill over the train tracks, coming from Friendship Circle, where they had just basically, you know, encountered a victory. And we all were joining together at the corner. And like, I just sent a message to my friend in which I said that I never felt more powerful in that moment with all those people. I'm sorry. And then it was, we turned the corner and it was not even a minute after I sent that message to my friend that the car came through. I heard a loud screech. And my friend and I grabbed each other by the arm and jumped onto the sidewalk. And it was just chaos. I've never screamed like that before in my entire life. I've never heard things like that. I've never seen anything like that before in my entire life. There was just so much going on where I was at. I wasn't even thinking like screaming for my friends and family. I just saw people on the ground and I thought they were dead.
That car crashed into another car that then crashed into everyone else.
Yes. And then once they slammed into the car, there was a lot of people still on the road. And that's when they threw it in reverse and they flew back and hurting more people and were kind of chased out of the mall. That car came down very far through the mall, through alleys before it got to us. So there's no question on intent. This was an act of terrorism. Anyone who questions that, we know why you're questioning it. We know why. It's not a secret. We know. It's terrorism. That's what they wanted, and that's what they did.
Lisa Moore, I wanted to bring in Lisa, who's sitting next to you, a registered nurse who assisted other victims at the car attack. Can you describe what you found there right after James Alex Fields smashed his car into another car, leading to the injury of many and the death of a 32-year-old woman who is protesting against racism named Heather Heyer?
Yeah, sure. I'd also like to thank you for having me. I was not on the scene when it happened. I was actually at McGuffey Park at the time. We were very tied into, we had walkie-talkies, and of course we had phones, and we were keeping very kind of abreast of what was needed. As an RN, I was trying to be in tune to where I was needed. The text came very quickly in a rapid succession that the car act of terrorism, including with the car, had happened. I ran from McGuffey Park down the mall. Anytime I would come upon a crowd, I just screamed, "I'm an RN, I'm an RN." And people were very happy to just let me through. When I got upon the scene, there was a wall of policemen kind of keeping people from it. And I told them immediately, "I'm an RN and I want to help." They let me through. It had probably been less than 5 minutes, maybe 5 minutes, after it happened when I got there. It was very chaotic. There was a lot of screaming. There were a lot of people on the ground. There was a lot of blood on the ground. And there were, thankfully, a lot of people already helping. There were other medics. I happened to end up near one victim who was a young woman who I now know was in town from Houston. She was very confused. She was conscious. She was able to talk. However, it was clear to me that she was very injured and needed assistance. So I felt that my skills could best be used with her without having to wade further into the crowd of chaos. And so I ended up primarily staying with her for the better part of an hour until we got her in an ambulance where she was taken to UVA. She also had a friend, two friends with her, one of which was also minorly injured. So she wasn't so much a priority. But it was very chaotic. It was very surreal. I would absolutely describe it as a terrorism scene. There was a lot of fear. There was a lot of uncertainty. The whole time I was running there, I didn't know what I was going to come upon. I wasn't at the time worried about it. In retrospect, I'm a little relieved that nothing else of violence happened afterwards, so that we were able to get the victims out and get them help.
Brandi Gonzalez, before we go to break and we say goodbye to you, President Trump did not single out white supremacist violence. Your comments on this, as people across the political spectrum, including many of what were his Republican allies, condemn his statements or lack of statements. Even as the time of this broadcast today, he's tweeted a number of things, none of them about what took place this weekend.
I think it just sends a very clear message of who he is not willing to offend. And that's pretty clear. I think that's been clear for a really long time. I do want to say, however, on a state level, that I'm very unhappy with the comments from Governor McAuliffe, from the mayor of Charlottesville, and from the chief of police of Charlottesville. The press statement they made on the day was just one after the other of, this is not my fault. And every update that I've received is completely unacceptable. I personally believe that there should be a public and clear apology from the three, and also an apology from the ACLU for fighting for their right to have that rally, because this all could have been prevented. And all you're doing is sending a clear message of who you care about. So maybe people should stop and realize what their actions and what the things that they do are actually saying to us, the people. And also, I would like to end on a high note of, like, they didn't win yesterday. White supremacy did not win yesterday. They did not do anything that they came there to do successfully besides incite a little bit of fear. But this will not intimidate us. I believe that we can win and we will win. And it's not over.
Brandi Gonzalez,
going to be there to fight it.
I want to thank you joining us, injured in the car attack, what has been called domestic terrorism on Saturday, and Lisa Moore, registered nurse who is helping some of the victims in Charlottesville, Virginia. When we come back, we'll be joined by one of the organizers of the anti-white supremacist protests. We'll be talking to Jalaine Schmidt, a professor at the University of Virginia. Dr. Cornel West spoke both Friday night and Saturday night in Charlottesville. And we'll be speaking with Reverend Tracy Blackman, who is also there. Stay with us.
I'm going to tell all you fascists, you may be surprised. People all over this world are getting organized. You're about to lose. All you fascists, about to lose. Every color marching side by side, marching across the fields.
You Fascists Bound to Lose by Billy Bragg here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. We're talking about the terror in Charlottesville. The white supremacist violence there began Friday night as hundreds of neo-Nazis, KKK members, and other white nationalists descended on the city and participated in a torch march. Yes, burning torches in a surprise march across the University of Virginia campus, surrounded the statue of Thomas Jefferson on Friday night. They were chanting, "Blood, not soil," a well-known Nazi blood and soil, a well-known Nazi phrase. "You will not replace us, and you will not replace us," and "White lives matter." We continue our hour-long discussion. We're joined in Charlottesville by Virginia Jalane Schmidt, an organizer with the local Black Lives Matter movement, an associate professor of religious studies at the University of Virginia. Here in New York, we're joined by Dr. Cornel West, professor of the practice of public philosophy at Harvard University, who is in Charlottesville. And in St. Louis, we're joined by Reverend Tracy Blackman, executive minister of Justice and Witness Ministries of the United Church of Christ, who is also in Charlottesville this weekend. Cornel West, talk about what you saw Friday night. You were there in a church. You were speaking along with others. Did you expect to see what you saw outside?
No. I knew I was going to hear a powerful sermon by my dear sister, Reverend Dr. Tracy Blackman, and we heard one. We heard poignant words by Professor Jalane Schmidt, and I had a few things to say. It was a beautiful moment. All colors, all religious traditions, Muslims, Jews, Christian, black, white, red, indigenous peoples. And we should never downplay the vicious attack on gay brothers, lesbian sisters, bisexuals, and trans folk that was part of the chanting that took place the next day. But what happened was they held us hostage in the church. We could not leave after the service because the torch march was threatening the people who were there. And so in that sense, I said, boy, these neo-fascists, they're out of control. Where are the police? And who would think that our dear sister Heather, my dear comrade, who also was with IWW, you know, it's very important. She was an organizer. She stood with us on Saturday. She paid the ultimate price, and many of us may have to pay that ultimate price.
I wanted to go to Reverend Tracy Blackman, but first to your MSNBC interview on Saturday when you were in Charleston, when you were rushed off the live shot as people around you were attacked. Let's go to that.
The schedule for the Nazi and the fascist example was supposed to be today and not last night. So we gathered in a standing room only, maximum capacity crowd to give a word of encouragement. I was invited in to give a speech to that regard. And as we were closing down, I gotta go.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know what is happening here. I don't know what just happened there
our
guest.
That was Joy Reid of MSNBC as Tony Blackman was whisked away by an ally right there on the set. Reverend Blackman, what happened then?
Well, I was giving the interview for Joy Reid, and thank you for having me here. And I also want to echo my condolences, my deepest sympathy to the family of Heather and to the family of the law enforcement officers who also lost their lives in this unnecessary, tragic event. Joy Reid had invited me on her show to talk about what had happened at the church the night before. And they were not aware of what was happening in Charlottesville until I began to make some calls to let people know that Charlottesville was under attack. They immediately sent a team out to cover, and their news team was stationed inside the perimeter of the events that were happening Saturday. And so I was asked to come and do an interview and with the permission of local people on the scene, the community organizers from Charlottesville. I asked them first. I was given permission to do that interview. And in the midst of the interview, we began to hear pops. And I didn't know what those pops were. I still don't know what those pops were. But the security that was there rushed me off from the camera. I really didn't know what was happening in that moment.
That's Reverend Tracy Blackman, who's speaking to us now from St. Louis, who is in Charlottesville this weekend on Friday night, addressing people in the church, and on Saturday on the street. Professor Jarlene Schmidt is also with us. And you're with Black Lives Matter. You were very involved with the organizing around what took place. Can you tell us what happened this weekend, what you understood was going to happen, how people organized, and the kind of response by all of the authorities? Jarlene Schmidt is just being seated right now. So let me go to Cornel West. I heard, The Guardian reported, that people that night who were responding to the torch march were actually attacked with swung torches, pepper spray, and lighter fluid.
Absolutely. You had a number of the courageous students of all colors at the University of Virginia who were protesting against the neo-fascists themselves. The neo-fascists had their own ammunition, and this is very important to keep in mind because the police, for the most part, pulled back. The next day, for example, although the 20 of us who were standing, many of them clergy, we would have been crushed like cockroaches if it were not for the anarchists and the anti-fascists who approached over 350 anti-fascists. We just had 20, and we singing "This Little Light of Mine." You know what I mean? So that
Antifa, meaning anti-fascists.
The anti-fascists and the crucial role, the anarchists, because they saved our lives, actually. We would have been completely crushed, and I'll never forget that. Meaning what? Meaning that you had the police holding back on the one hand. So we couldn't even get arrested. We were there to get arrested. We couldn't get arrested because the police had pulled back and just allowing fellow citizens to go at each other, you see, and with all of the consequences that would follow therefrom. So in that sense, you know, I think what we're really seeing, though, Sister Amy, is the American empire in decay with the rule of big money, with massive militarism, facilitated by the scapegoating of the most vulnerable of immigrants, Muslims, Jews, Arabs, gay, lesbians, trans, and bisexuals, and black folk. The white supremacy was so intense. I'd never seen that kind of hatred in my life. We stood there, and nine units went by and looking right in our eyes, and they cussing me out and so forth and so on. And they lucky I didn't lose my Holy Ghost, to tell you the truth, because I wanted to start swinging myself. I'm a Christian, but not a pacifist, you know. But I held back. But that kind of hatred, but that is just the theater. It's big money, it's big military, and the way in which this capitalist civilization is leading us toward unbelievable darkness and bleakness. And the beautiful thing is to fight back. It was a beautiful thing to see all the people coming back. But they had more fascists than anarchists, more fascists than fight back.
Well, Jarlene Schmidt, didn't the president of the University of Virginia, fearful of violence, tell people not to go out to meet the white supremacists? Can you talk about the organizing and the just what took place this weekend? And on Sunday, you passed the white supremacist Richard Spencer. I mean, there were a number of people there. David Duke was there celebrating President Trump, in fact.
Yes, well, with regard to the statement put out by University of Virginia President Teresa Sullivan, it was a very tepid statement. And yes, again, as she did with the letter before the Ku Klux Klan rally on July the 8th, again, encouraging university affiliates to avoid protesting this rally. And what was unacceptable about that on a moral level is that the University of Virginia has its own ties to the Ku Klux Klan from the 1920s. There was a chapter there of the Klan at the university. The Virginia Knights of the Ku Klux Klan pledged $1,000 to the University of Virginia for their centennial fund in 1929. This went unmentioned in President Sullivan's letter. Also, the two main organizers of the rally on Saturday, of the so-called Unite the Right rally, are graduates of the University of Virginia. Both Richard Spencer and Jason Kessler are UVA alums, and that also was unacknowledged in the president's letter. So she was advising UVA affiliates to avoid
protesting the very white supremacy that the university has historically been involved in, not just with collusion, but with actually producing systems of white supremacy. That was unacceptable.
And you passed Richard Spencer on Sunday?
I was walking down the downtown mall. I was trying to get away from the site of his 2 p.m. Actually, it was Jason Kessler, a local activist. I was trying to get away from the site of his planned 2 p.m. press conference. So I was walking in the opposite direction at the opposite end of the downtown mall, which is an outside pedestrian mall. I saw the police with riot shields lining up too deep, just, you know, going in into formation, a large number of them. And I thought, oh, no, this isn't good. And then, sure enough, I see he who shall not be named approaching toward me. So I ducked into a comic book store. I told the proprietor, the workers there, what was going on, and they spirited me out the back door and into an alleyway where I waited until things calmed down for about, it was about a half hour. This was the second time in 3 days that I've had to leave, a building, through either a side entrance or a back entrance and be spirited away by my security guard. I've had 24-hour security on me. I've not been staying at my own home. I've been staying at a safe house. This was the second time that my security guard has had to, kind of escort me out of a situation. As Dr. West was mentioning and Reverend Blackman, I was also in St. Paul's Episcopal Church on Friday night at the mass prayer service, when we became trapped inside by the large gathering of the torch bearing Nazis that was taking place just across the street, from the church. We were trapped in there. I tweeted from inside the church. It was retweeted many times. I said, we're trapped in here. And then my security detail just kind of whisked me out a side door. We went, down an alleyway, and then hopped into his car and took back streets out of there. So this has been a very tense, few days. Going on here. It started already on Thursday. I got white supremacist flyers stuck under my windshield wiper. And then Friday morning already, there were helicopters circling overhead all day, already starting in the morning.
And one of those helicopters went down. That's right. Killing two of the officers who were inside the helicopter. We're going to break again. But when we come back, this particular rally and Nazi torch march through the University of Virginia, in response to the statue of Robert E. Lee being taken down, the parks renamed, now Emancipation Park was Lee Park, and Jackson Park is now Justice Park. You, Jelaine Schmidt, we've been very involved with this Confederate monument removal movement, and I want to ask you about that as well. We're talking about terror in Charlottesville this weekend. Latest count, 3 dead. One anti-white nationalist marcher, pro-peace and justice protester, was killed when a white nationalist crashed his car into the crowd. 2 police officers in a helicopter also went down on Saturday. Stay with us.
The conviction of the woman you made me, I find blades of grass from the island you lent me. I find on every floor in every drawer though I'm not an island, I'm a body of water. Jeweled in the evening, a solitary daughter. If picked at by noon, by midnight I'm ruined. Leave me alone.
Solitary Daughter by Bedouin. And for radio listeners, we were just showing pictures of Heather Heyer, the 32-year-old woman who was killed in the car attack, the terror attack on Saturday in Charlottesville, as counter-demonstrators challenged the white supremacist march that was there. This latest response this weekend to Robert E. Lee's statue being taken down. There are some who are saying Robert E. Lee's statue should be replaced by Heather Heyer, a statue of Heather Heyer. Jalaine Schmidt is with us, organizer with Local Black Lives Matter, professor of religious studies at the University of Virginia. This whole Confederate statue removal movement, you've been involved with this. Can you talk about it and what it meant, what it means for Charlottesville?
Sure. About a year and a half ago, a young African-American high school student started a change.org petition to have the Confederate monuments removed. This garnered several hundred or a number of, you know, signatures. A city council member took up the charge, and then the city council set up a blue ribbon commission to consider the Confederate monuments. And so there was a series of public hearings over a period of about 6 months, concluding in December. And over the period of 6 months, as it started out, a few people even were aware of it or were keeping track of what was going on, few residents of Charlottesville. And the folks who attended tended to be older white folks who favored keeping the monuments. As more and more people found out, in part through the efforts of activists, we started inviting our friends and neighbors, informing them about what was going on. And so as more people found out what was going on, more people started attending, until by the end of the process, 6 months later, opinion had switched, at least among the attendees, basically 180 degrees. And there was large attendance of folks who were in favor of removing the monuments.
Reverend Tracy Blackman, talk about what you said on Friday night in the church, but also what you think has come out of this weekend and your response to President Trump. Across the political spectrum, his comment or lack of comment has been decried. I just want to play it one more time. When finally forced to confront this issue, not singling out the violence of the white supremacists. This is Donald Trump speaking from his luxury golf resort in Bedminster, New Jersey.
We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides, on many sides. It's been going on for a long time in our country. Not Donald Trump, not Barack Obama. It's been going on for a long, long time. It is no place in America. What is vital now is a swift restoration of law and order and the protection of innocent lives.
That was President Trump. Reverend Tracy Blackman, your response.
Amy, thank you for the opportunity, because I think it's important that we not leave this moment without contextualizing what happened in Charlottesville in a larger narrative that has been promoted by this current administration. Some of Donald Trump's remarks, I appreciate the fact that he says it's been going on a long time in this country. Racism, bigotry, xenophobia, homophobia has been going on in this country a long time. But what is happening under this current administration is permission to hate. The hateful rhetoric of our current administration, not starting with Donald Trump, but starting with the 8 years of the GOP laying a groundwork for it to be permissible to denigrate and to hate people based on their targeting of a black president, a president that they didn't like before any decisions were made, a president that they met together against on the day of inauguration. So I'm not making this about the personhood of Barack Obama. I'm making this about white supremacy in this country. That laid a groundwork for the election of someone who ran basically on a hateful agenda. And the hateful remarks, the rhetoric that this president speaks and tweets has created an environment where those who hate have permission to be safe in public spaces. The thing that troubled me the most about my encounters this weekend was the fact I'm from Birmingham, Alabama. I was raised there. I've seen Klan rallies before. The very last Klan rally that I witnessed in person, I was 5 years old standing on a sidewalk watching the Klan rally go down the main street of Birmingham, Alabama in the city. I don't remember my fear. I remember my puzzlement in that moment. And emblazoned in my memory are those hooded sheets that they wore as some were rode horses and some carried crosses and some carried flags. What sticks out for me is that we are now in a country and in a time where I witnessed masses of white supremacists walking down the main streets of Charlottesville, Virginia, emboldened enough to take the sheets off. These white people were wearing button downs and polos and baseball caps. And I began to weep, knowing that it was quite possible that some of the people who were marching with these torches, shouting blood and soil, shouting, "You will not replace us," a ludicrous notion of white fear that has been strengthened and emboldened by an administration that is filled with hateful rhetoric. Yes. And we now have a president who will not even declare, will not even denounce white supremacy right out. It's unconscionable.
We just have 30 seconds, Reverend Cornell West.
It is very clear that Brother Donald Trump has neo-fascist sensibilities. His failure to condemn white supremacy and domestic terrorism means that he's complicitous in effect and consequence. But it's very important to keep in mind that even under Barack Obama, as brilliant as he was, he was still a ruler of big money, massive militarism. The racism coming at him was vicious, but the inequality, the inability to speak to the issues of class makes it easier for right-wing populism, neo-fascism to flow. We've got to be critical of the system.
Part two of our conversation online at democracynow.org. Dr. Cornell West, Reverend Tracy Blackman, Jarlene Schmidt. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This program is coming to you from 99.1 WIDELP in Madison. We continue now with the concluding part of the program. The following is from Democracy Now! On Wednesday, August 16.
Let's go to Donald Trump Tuesday at this bellicose, angry news conference he held in the lobby of his residence at Trump Tower, defending his decision to wait 2 days before placing blame on white supremacists for the deadly violence in Charlottesville, Virginia, last Saturday. During the news conference, the president attacked the counter-protesters, repeating his earlier claim that he had made on Saturday when he talked about both sides being blamed for the violence.
Said there was hatred, there was violence on both sides.
I think there's blame on both sides. You look at both sides. I think there's blame on both sides, and I have no doubt about it, and you don't have any doubt about it either.
And
if you reported it accurately, you would say.
They showed up in Charlottesville.
Excuse me.
To protest.
Excuse me. They didn't put themselves down as you. And you had some very bad people in that group. But you also had people that were very fine people on both sides. You had people in that group. Excuse me. I saw the same pictures as you did. You had people in that group that were there to protest the taking down of, to them, a very, very important statue and the renaming of a park from Robert E. Lee to another name. George Washington was a slave owner. Was George Washington a slave owner? So will George Washington now lose his status? Are we going to take down statues to George Washington? How about Thomas Jefferson? What do you think of Thomas Jefferson? You like him? Okay, good. Are we going to take down the statue? Because he was a major slave owner. Now we're going to take down his statue. So you know what? It's fine. You're changing history, you're changing culture, and you had people, and I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists, because they should be condemned totally. But you had many people in that group other than neo-Nazis and white nationalists, okay? And the press has treated them absolutely unfairly. Now, in the other group also, you had some fine people, but you also had troublemakers, and you see them come with the black outfits and with the helmets and with the baseball bats. You had a lot of bad people in the other group too.
The press treated unfairly, sir. I'm sorry. I just didn't understand what you were saying. You were saying the press has treated white nationalists unfairly.
No.
I just didn't understand what you were saying.
No. There were people in that rally, and I looked the night before. If you look, there were people protesting very quietly the taking down of the statue of Robert E. Lee.
Bree Newsom, that's the president of the United States, the 45th president of the United States, speaking yesterday. On Saturday, he sounded like this. Then on Monday, he read a teleprompter speech under enormous pressure from his own party, from business leaders, from grassroots activists across the country, and read a speech where he said the names of white nationalists, neo-Nazis, and KKK. He used those terms. But now, without that teleprompter, this is what he had to say. Your thoughts?
Well, off teleprompter, Trump is the real Trump. Twitter Trump is the real Trump. When we see him, you know, tweeting an image of the Trump train running over, you know, a person with the CNN logo across their face. I mean, that's the accurate Trump. I also definitely want to push back against this notion that there's blame on both sides. There is absolutely not blame on both sides. I am quite familiar with the local organizers in Charlottesville. Several of them are clergy members. They have been organizing for several months around the issue of removing this Confederate monument, organizing, going to their city council meetings, and were successful in convincing the city to remove the statue. What then followed was that they became a target for white nationalist organizations nationwide. And, you know, this is not the first time that we've seen white nationalists descend on Charlottesville with torches. And there was also a Klan rally a couple months ago. So the clergy were organizing in response to this threat that was being posed to their town by white nationalist organizations on a national scale. They had planned a counter protest, a nonviolent counter protest. They sent out a call across the nation for clergy to come and join them to stand in defiance of this planned white nationalist rally on Saturday, August 12th. They were holding a prayer meeting on Friday night when white nationalists carrying torches surrounded the church. So they were outside of the church shouting at people inside the church, praying, clergy members, people of all ages, children. And then they marched over to the campus of UVA, where they also assaulted students who had surrounded the monument and were holding a banner. They were unarmed. They were standing in peace. They were standing with a message against racist violence, and they were descended upon and beat. And again, there was no police response. There were no arrests made. Compare that to Ferguson, where you had 128 people arrested, where we saw images of families marching during the daytime and police in tanks pointing sniper rifles at them. I mean, again, I think that it is really dangerous for us to analyze the events in Saturday without taking a broader view of historical context, both recent and, you know, of course, within the context of the past 100 years, where, you know, the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, these things are only about 50 or so plus years old. This is very, very recent history.